Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we'll talk with two of the three authors of a 2013 review of the Spokane County court system. We'll look at where progress has been made and where there are still challenges as community leaders ponder yet again whether to build a new jail. Some of the recommendations from that blueprint for reform have been implemented, some haven't. Here to talk about that are retired Superior Court Judge Jim Murphy and attorney Philip Dutch Wetzel. They were recruited, along with former U.S. Attorney Jim McDevitt, to research and write the report. For context, Jim Murphy has the backstory leading up to that.
We were approached by Mayor Condon. There was a proposal that was made to start using the Benton County Court jail for housing Spokane County misdemeanants and gross misdemeanants. And the thinking behind that was that while the Spokane County Jail charges about $125 to $35 a day, the Benton County Jail, which was a new jail at that time, had a lot of empty beds and would lease those to Spokane County for about $65 a day. So there was a good deal of discussion about the place that justice plays in that sort of a decision, and questions arose as to how public defenders and defense attorneys could readily meet with their clients on a regular basis in preparation for the defense of their client's case when there's 2.5-3 hours difference between the residence of the client and the residence of the attorney. So I think cooler heads prevailed, and that decision was finally put on hold. But Mayor Condon wished to look into the possibility of a more friendly bottom line in housing prisoners in the Spokane County Jail and or diminishing the number of people being held on a daily basis. And then that discussion was taken to the county commissioners as well, and it was decided that it would be appropriate to look into the facts, which is a great place to start, and determine what could be done to reform our justice system in order to alleviate the crowding problems, diminish the time spent in jail for those who were only there because they couldn't afford to get out, and issues such as that.
The county sheriff's office provided help to the trio as they conducted dozens of interviews and public meetings. After a year of work, they issued their report in January 2013 with a series of recommendations. Some of those have been acted upon. For example, the county has created a Law and Justice Council that features representatives from all parts of the criminal justice system. It has hired a full-time administrator to oversee the reform efforts. And the court system has implemented a variety of measures designed to improve the court's operating efficiency. In addition, local mental health providers are working with first responding agencies, on a small scale anyway, to provide in-the-field mental health assessments. That's a move that has been widely praised. Some of that work has been funded by $3.8 million granted over the last several years by the MacArthur Foundation. Philip Wetzel says there are still recommendations that haven't been addressed.
A recurring and very stubborn issue has been the issue of pretrial detention. At any one time, about 75% of the people in the jail are there pretrial. And about roughly 10% of those are pretrial detainees for misdemeanors. And so I think there are some things that must be done more quickly to reduce that number. One thing that we committed to early on was that we would not come up with just anecdotes and spout our opinions, but we would work on data. And so something that we've found has been another stubborn problem is the gathering, of effective data. And this is the issue. So people are in jail for one reason, and that's because a judge has put them there. And we do not have data on what judge is putting the people in jail and for how long and whether those are good decisions. And so we need that data. Concomitantly, the same issue arises with prosecutors. The prosecutor is the driving force for all the detention in this county, and we don't have data on whether those are good decisions and whether that we're getting bang for our buck. And so I think that the biggest challenge right now is to gather that data and make good use of it.
You used the word stubborn twice. In the first, you used it for referring to pretrial and whether or not people should be in jail before their trials. Why is there that stubbornness that you've referred to?
I have a lot of opinions, but as I told you, we're not in the business of making opinions. What we need is data. So Criminal Rule 3.2 governs these issues, and they're very difficult decisions. Every day the judges are making very hard decisions. There's a tension between the criminal accused's right to be released, right to his liberty, and the protection of the community, and the avoidance of risk that a defendant will flee. And so the rule, thankfully, gives very good guidance on how those issues can be and must be resolved. But whether that rule is consistently applied, I think that the data is going to show that it's not being consistently applied. And we need that data to illuminate the officers, prosecutors, and judges who are not implementing that law.
Judge, you served both in the district court and in the superior court.
Correct.
How did you determine whether or not someone should stay in incarceration before their trial or whether you let them go?
I tried to follow faithfully the dictates of Criminal Rule 3.2, and Dutch has just kind of outlined what those considerations will be. You take the average person who comes before a judge and you find that they may have an absolutely clean record. This is their first offense. They've got a job and a family here in town. Pretty easy decision right there. The criminal rule presupposes that a person shall be released on their own recognizance under circumstances such as that. Beyond that sort of an absolutely clean record, you begin to have compounding factors that a judge must consider in determining whether to release this person. And in the event there are complicating factors, you have a duty to try and mitigate those factors by applying less restrictive alternatives to keeping the person in jail. And those less restrictive alternatives may be having the person wear an electronic device, have a person report each day. You may have the person doing any number of things that gives accountability for their whereabouts and whether or not they're following the conditions that have been imposed on them as part of their release. And again, as Dutch said, you consider whether or not they're a danger to commit a violent felony, whether they are a danger to flee, or whether they are a danger to intimidate witnesses. And basically, those are the three things that you need to consider. Something that really complicates all of this is their criminal history. Usually the first thing the prosecutor says if he or she has that information is this person has been warranted before. There have been warrants issued for their failure to appear or for any number of reasons. We need to look at what's behind those warrants, whether they are substantive or whether they are simply ministerial actions that have been taken without the knowledge of the defendant or without the presence of the defendant, without the presence of an attorney, any of those things that may have mitigated against the issuance of that warrant. And indeed, if there was a valid warrant, what can we do this time in order to a sure appearance, assure no intimidation of witness, assure that the person isn't going to be committing violent felonies going forward. And you always have that presumption that the person should be released on their own recognizance. Beyond that, you begin to work through those. And that's what I tried to do with each defendant I had. One of the big reasons I don't think that's always done is the fear of judicial appearance on the front page of the Inlander or the Spokesman Review when a person is released, subsequently does something that is untoward, and that judge has to run for office.
Yeah. We're talking with retired Judge Jim Murphy and attorney Philip Wetzel about their 2013 Blueprint for Reform report about the Spokane County court system.
Do you think these judicial questions of justice that you take seriously because it's part of what you do every day? And then we talk about the cost of a jail, you know, half price to send them to Benton County versus housing them here. Do the politicians who have to answer to voters take the judicial question seriously enough, do you think?
No, I don't. I think, unfortunately, there's a great deal of temptation for a politician to follow the road of least resistance and say, this guy was arrested. There's good reason to believe he committed the crime. He ought to be kept here until the matter is adjudicated. There are others who are completely, totally unaware of the requirements of Criminal Rule 3.2 and what a judicial officer needs to go through in order to make that decision. I think further, we don't do a very good job of making a record on why we are keeping a person incarcerated pending trial. If we were somehow more accountable for following 3.2 to the letter, we would have a good track record, and then we could make decisions in reviewing the application of the rule to the facts of each defendant, and also be able to find out which judge made those decisions.
What do you think, Dutch, on this? Do you agree with Judge Murphy?
Well, I certainly do agree with Judge Murphy. So the United States Supreme Court has weighed in on this before, because recently there's been some commentary that some politicians have said that there needs to be a cash bail and a large bails need to be set on people who were accused of crimes. And that is that approach by a judge is essentially a dishonest approach. The bail needs to be set at an amount that would ensure their appearance. Bail doesn't do anything towards guaranteeing the safety of the community. If a rich person bails out, he's still a danger to the community. In federal court, they don't discuss that often at all. So in Stack versus Boyle, 1951, the United States Supreme Court said that game that is sometimes played about setting a high bail to just ensure the detention of the defendant is unconstitutional. And I think that needs to be clearly stated and clearly honored, that decision.
So the underlying question behind the report that you did was, can the city of Spokane afford to build a new jail? Can it afford to house people? How big do we need? All the fundamental questions we're talking about in 2019. Am I right? Do you think have things changed a little bit since then?
I think things have changed a little bit. We now house federal prisoners in our jail on a contract basis. If we didn't have that, we may have many more beds, and it wouldn't be so overcrowded. Keep in mind this was brought about because of overcrowding the jail. Once we got into the overcrowding issue, we then dug deeper and really got into the fundamental justice questions that come with pretrial release and pretrial incarceration. I can't agree more with Dutch that that excessive bails are a very handy way of keeping a person in jail. Some states have begun to look at no bail hearings, and so they don't use money. They don't use bail bond as an issue. And I would love to see that happen in this community as well, to look at alternatives to keeping people in jail, whereas you may be able to pay a $50,000 bail, but if I were in there and I'm a man on the street and no visible means of support, I can't afford anything. So for the same crime, I may be sitting in that jail until the day comes when I could finally either plead guilty or go to trial, and oftentimes they call that tenderizing through the plea process, and you sit there long enough and you say, okay, I'll plead guilty because I want to get out of here, and that's very common. Whereas you're out that next day after your first appearance, so that isn't justice.
Along those same lines, the last time we looked at the statistics for the jail, there were several people, I'm going to say maybe 20 inmates, who were being held on bail of $1,000. That means they could get a bail bondsman, if they had a cosigner, to post bail if they had a $100. And there are people in our jail who can't do that. And so basically our system would be better off if we paid the bail, because they're spending $150 a day while they're waiting for trial.
Given the fundamental tensions we're talking about versus bails and legal financial obligations, which are the court imposed fees that someone would go through just simply by the fact that they're in your courtroom,
right.
We're talking about those versus some in law enforcement who say, you know, we need to have more room in a jail because we've got these people who are committing crimes over and over, and we just don't have enough room to keep them in jail, and therefore they're being turned out. They're committing more crimes and all that. Is the conversation we're having as a community in 2019 one that we can get to compromise in the right issues? You guys have been around for a long time in Spokane. Is this an argument that we can get toward and have fundamental discussion, or are we going to go through the same thing 10 years from now? Because that's where we are, in essence, where you were 10 years ago or 8 years ago when you started this.
We could certainly have that conversation. Whether the conversation may be successful or not is another question. I think there, individual personalities and political philosophies come into play. And if you have leadership that tends to respect the 3.2 decisions, if you have leadership that tends to recognize that there are alternatives that can certainly work, and leaders who are willing to fund working with those alternatives, I think there's all kinds of room for modification of behavior short of keeping a person in jail. You look at the Spokane Municipal Court's community court. It's doing a marvelous job of handling people who are in front of them on misdemeanors and sometimes gross misdemeanors, I believe, without the need for incarceration. And they're finding that they're being very successful in reducing recidivism. They're doing a great job in providing services for people who need services: alcohol, drugs, housing, employment, family issues, things like that. We need to work toward that. And one of our recommendations was a community center that would bring people through and have them evaluated at that point to find their needs before we take the next step of deciding to incarcerate that person pretrial. And we're still working toward that. That's one of the functions of the Law and Justice Council in dealing with that sort of a center. We went down to Hillsboro, Oregon, and saw that in place, tremendously successful. And I hope that eventually we're going to be able to work toward that and make that work.
Do you have that same optimism?
I do, and we have a model here that we cited in our report and that's the Spokane County Juvenile Court. They are applying what is sometimes called smart justice concepts and procedures. They have reduced the recidivism of their population year after year with lower and lower budgets. Similarly, the Spokane Municipal Court Probation Department utilizes electronic home monitoring much more widely than the county courts do, and they have experienced very good luck with that.
There's one other point that you brought up regarding if there is to be a community correction center or jail. You argue that it should be centrally located. In talking with some, let's say, mayoral city council candidates and asking them that question, a lot of them want to put it out on the West Plains. They want to get it out of downtown. Why would you have it centrally located? Why would you put a jail, in essence, close to where it is right now or where it is right now?
Because that's where most of the people live, is within a radius of this central area. And one of the great problems in failure to appear is inability to find transportation, particularly among those who are truly indigent. If we have something downtown, if we can give them a bus pass to get on a bus and get down to the community correction center and deal with issues that need dealing with, you're ahead. You put them out on the West Plains, I suppose you could give them a bus pass and they may get out there. But for instance, right now, if you're set to send someone out to the Geiger pre-release center or release center out on the West Plains, they have to walk about a mile after they get off the bus to even get to their appointments. Let's put it where the people are, where the people can readily get to it.
I think that's right. I want to answer your question, but I want to follow up on one of Judge Murphy's comments, too, about the Hillsborough, Oregon program. The Hillsborough, Oregon program has a jail. It's probably as big as ours, but right across the street is a pre-trial release or post-trial release center where inmates step down and they're given, a bus pass, job training, et cetera, et cetera. The three biggest reasons for recidivism are food, clothing, and shelter. And so those kinds of things need to be installed before we can expect that a releasee is going to be able to stay on the straight and narrow.
Philip Wetzel and Jim Murphy are our guests on today's Inland Journal podcast. They were two of the three authors of a 2013 study of the Spokane County Criminal Justice System, Blueprint for Reform. When they issued their report, their obligation was over. But now, 6 years later, Murphy says they're coming back to get involved again.
We are in the process of being reconstituted as a criminal justice commission. And we've been asked to issue report cards on each of the agencies to which recommendations have been made. Hopefully that's going to give us the data that Dutch was talking about in order to present it in such a way that allows the Law and Justice Council and the leaders of these various agencies to self-evaluate what they've been doing, how they're doing it, and what they need to do to improve if that's the need. At the same time, I think we have an obligation to continue to applaud compliance with it. And as Dutch pointed out, the success over in the county juvenile court has been remarkable. And they've provided a means of getting to where we were trying to get with this product. And so that's our next big step, is doing this evaluation and issuing report cards, if you will. That's what we've been calling it.
Then I'll ask the question, I guess, that I've sort of already asked. Are you satisfied with the progress that's been made toward the recommendations that you put forth?
No, I'm not.
No, I'm not either. We recognized from the first day of our commission that the people who really make a difference in the criminal justice system are elected officials. They're the judges and the prosecutor. They can make it work or they can make it fail, and they can make our initiatives work or fail. And there's not one thing we can do about it, because the remedy is the ballot box. But there aren't, the voters don't have a clue about what is occurring and whether these decision makers and these decisions that are being made are good or bad. And if we commit, as we have done, that we are not going to give opinions, but we're going to use data, we need to illuminate the decisions and the effectiveness of those judges and those prosecutors so the voters can make an intelligent decision on how their money is being spent.
Now, there's a current process led by the current administrator, Maggie Yates, to bring in outside folks and to measure jail populations and that sort of thing, to try to do that. Are you happy with the progress that's being made in trying to collect that data that you want?
Yes, we have seen some of that data, and it's impressive and helpful. Yes.
I think Maggie's doing a very good job of contributing to the empirical data we need to do these reports that we're talking about, and that's important. I'm also happy with the direction we're headed in order to gather that data and be able to move forward and do the evaluation we want to do based on empirical data.
So then the question is, once they gather that data and they hand it to, there's essentially a community committee with lots of folks on it, who will make the recommendation of the county commissioners, build a jail, don't build a jail, build it here, build it this big, that sort of thing. Then are you optimistic then that data will be used in the right way to create a recommendation that is the best thing for the community?
I would think
there's
so.
There's a loaded question.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this whole thing goes much deeper than, do we need a jail? Do we need a bigger jail? This is the heart of our criminal justice system we're talking about, and that's what needs to be improved. It seems to me that if we can make the improvements to the criminal justice system that we've suggested, it's going to take care of itself, except for the structure itself. The structure itself may be antiquated. Maybe we need a new structure. I don't know about that. But that being said, I don't want to get into this just in order to justify the creation of a new building, a new jail, unless it's a community correction center adjacent to the jail or something like that. So... I would hope that if we make these recommendations and then we evaluate them and we give the information to the Law and Justice Commission and they read it and take it to heart, those improvements will take care of themselves and form will follow function.
So Judge Murphy is hopeful. How about you?
I'm hopeful too, and I have evidence for that. There are many, many people in this community who are committed to doing the right thing, mm-hmm. and this is the right thing to do. The juvenile court kind of plodded along for a long time, and the state legislature commanded juvenile courts throughout the state to implement smart justice policies, and they did it with both feet and have had good success. That can be duplicated in the adult system.
Attorney Philip Wetzel and retired Judge Jim Murphy were, along with former U.S. Attorney Jim McDevitt, the authors of Blueprint for Reform, a 2013 review of the Spokane County criminal justice system. They will re-engage with the project this fall. Inland Journal is Spokane Public Radio's public affairs podcast and radio program. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play, or hear it at the Spokane Public Radio website. We welcome your comments and story ideas at inlandjournal@kpbx.org. I'm Doug Nadvornik.